This is the Toronto Today podcast. I'm your host, Greg Brady.
I mentioned this scenario in Niagara Falls as a comparison point for where housing asylum seekers are. And it was revealed about a month ago that 5,000 asylum seekers stayed in hotels in Niagara Falls between February 23, February 24. The refugee claimant stayed for 113 days, daily cost of $208 per person. That would include food, obviously. And the bill for the year is $115 million. And there's still a lot of great debate. That's a federal government responsibility. Federal governments handle temporary residents. But oftentimes, they just kind of do, in essence, an airdrop of money on a given point in time. It's an arbitrary amount. And they say to cities, see, we're covering our obligation here. When in reality, it could still leave shortfalls for the city potentially. And the Niagara Falls mayor, Jim Diodati, made that point. And it's tricky, right? You're really pushing upstairs when you're being harshly critical of the federal government in these particular cases. So we're finding out this morning that Toronto could house refugees at a Vaughan hotel amid what's been a bit of a crunch for the shelter. And a key city committee's endorsed nearly $86 million in new spending to support this system. And some of that cash will go to house refugees at this hotel in Vaughan. We'll try and get a sense of it right now with Toronto City Councillor John Burnside for Don Valley East as he joins Toronto Today as we speak. Councillor Burnside, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I lay all that out. It's such a complicated issue in terms of government responsibility and especially sharing finances to house refugees. And then there's the how much, how long argument. And it's a complex one, isn't it?
Well, it is, or it's being made to be, but I actually don't think it is that complex. I think anything to do with housing is the responsibility of other levels of government, primarily the federal level. You know, people are coming from around the world, around the province and around the country, and they're coming to Toronto, and we're having to foot the bill. Now, fortunately, it's not all the bill because other levels of government have stepped in. But ultimately, when people have the ability to be mobile, the question is, why is the Toronto taxpayer paying for that?
And this situation doesn't look like it's been resolved anymore. Is the federal government leaving the city with an unfortunate shortfall? Are they not meeting their obligations?
Well, there are different so I asked the question at committee. I saw that we were investing or paying for space in a hotel in Vaughan, which, you know, just on its surface is wrong. And so I asked the question, well, where's the funding coming from? And it was a very convoluted answer because there are different programs we can apply for and different sources of money from various levels of government. Nothing is straightforward. And that's kind of the problem, is that governments love these cost-sharing programs and to be convoluted so that the average person doesn't know who to blame. There needs to be a clear responsibility. And to me, it's the federal government. But in this case, you know, the question is, why are we paying for hotel space in Vaughan? Well, the answer is because we don't have any in Toronto. Well, okay, why are people coming to Toronto? Well, because that's the only place they know to come to. And, well, in Peel's defense, Peel as well at the airport.
Yes, yeah.
Right? So, you know, they're not, like, it galls me that we're paying for space in Vaughan while Vaughan is paying nothing at all.
What does this do? We'll head into a pretty busy, it's always, I think, busy in Toronto's a busy city, 12 months a year, 52 weeks a year. But I think we'd make the case there's more demand for hotels in Toronto when we get to nicer weather and when there's a lot of big things happening in the summer. What does this do to the cost of those hotels on a simple supply demand scale? Certainly we have less to offer other people. I gave you that example of Niagara Falls, and that was a case in point. Niagara Falls has tremendous demand for hotels every weekend of the year, and they were stuck, which puts the costs up for the average citizen, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Now, fortunately, some of the hotels that we're looking at are not, I'll say, Class A hotels. You know, we're not renting out the Four Seasons at Bay and Bloor. So, but that said, to your point, the more demand there is and less available space, the increase the cost. The real problem is there's no real strategy. Everything is very ad hoc. And that's why one level of government needs to take care of the whole thing, and that's the federal level of government. Municipal taxes were never meant to pay for refugees or homeless folks, for that matter, right? And we need to get back to clear responsibility in government so we can hold whichever level of government it is responsible for their actions or inaction.
Do you know how many hotels in Toronto, John, are housing refugees or migrants right now?
I actually don't. There, you know, it moves around because we had, a ton during the pandemic. And then a lot of those, you know, the one down on the Esplanade, they wanted their space back. So we've been sort of moving around. We have one up at the 404 and Highway 401. I know there's one there. But once again, the problem is they're leases of a short duration, 1, 2, 3 years. And then we often have to move on. And the problem with that is, we then have to pay to get the put the hotels back in their original condition, which can cost tens of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And then we have to go through the whole process again. So it's terribly inefficient as well.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the struggle right now is, and all I hear from people that live in Toronto and elsewhere, John, I'm sure you do too, because they're your constituents. I hear about four things. Everything else is window dressing: cost of living, health care, immigration, crime and safety. I hear about those four things more often. There's no fifth place that's close. And I bring this up to note that I do wonder if people want to press people like mayors more to push the federal government to be tighter with immigration. And I do think that's something, I think that's coming. It's just a question of who's going to sort of step over that line first. I think we've heard some of that from Patrick Brown in Brampton, but I'm going to make the case, John. I think we need to hear more municipal leaders say to the federal government, we've got to get this in line. And like, as you said, have a system here. Right now, it's very by the cuff, if you will, off the cuff, if you will.
Oh, 100%. Now, the problem is, now, I'll say Mayor Chao has been excellent at pressing the government, the federal government, to do more. But back to my point, and I think the point you're making is there needs to be actually a strategy. You know, what are your immigration levels? What are your refugee levels? What is the plan to help these people get started? And there is none. It's just, you know, good luck. And then municipalities feel the weight of it and they step in. And that's primarily Toronto.
I think she's making the point. To your point, I agree. She's making the point we need money. And she's been good at forcing the hand of the federal government and prying it out of their hands. But I'm not sure she's saying, what's your immigration policy and how can it work in concert with what cities need? I'd like to hear more of that. She's good at the former, not the latter, I think.
100%. But then I don't think any mayor, the problem is no mayor wants to wade into that. So yeah, you can say there's a lack of leadership there, but I guess we're at a situation of first things first, let's get the money. And, you know, quite frankly, every one of us has the opportunity to make that decision of which government and what policy we like during an election. So I think it's incumbent on us as individuals to get involved and not have, you know, 27% of people showing up at the polls, because then the governments really aren't accountable for anything.
Yeah, I hear that completely. That's really well said. John, I got to leave it there. Thanks so much for the time today. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Today podcast. We drop the highlights of the daily show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. Don't forget, you can hear the entire show on the radio, at home, on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa or say, hey, Google, play 640 Toronto or Toronto Today. You can hear us on between 5:30 and 9 weekdays on 640 Toronto. Have a great day.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.